from the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to America's most listened to late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, well, you've heard him before, but Stephen Quayle tonight talks about suitcase nukes in America. He calls it Lucifer's luggage. Get ready for that. Here's some quick stories of the day. Okay, those of you with computers, those of you who use Microsoft hardware software, listen to this one. Microsoft has issued patches for 5 critical bugs in its software. The bugs affect Windows, Internet Explorer, Word, Messenger, and Exchange. If exploited, the loopholes could give an attacker complete control over a compromised computer. One flaw is found to be so bad that even in the United Kingdom, their National Computer Security Advisor issued its own warning about it. They didn't even worry about what Microsoft was talking about. Users were urged to install the patches as soon as possible to ensure their machine was protected. You can just go to the Microsoft website, or if you go to Tools, when you open up, for example, Internet Explorer, you open up Tools and then click on Windows Update, and you should be okay. Now, because there's so many patches, it may take a while, and you'll also have to restart your computer, but you should do that. A second Indonesian volcano has sprung to life after a series of terrifying quakes, intensifying fears that violent geological forces will unleash a new disaster. Now, this one is Tangkuban Perahu, a smoldering mountain some 7,000 feet high near the city of Bangdon on the Java Island. It began rumbling overnight, prompting scientists to raise the alarm and declare the summit around the open crater just off limits. They say there's a possibility that poisonous gas may come out, and they have raised the alert because of that. A day earlier, more than 20,000 people out there fled the slopes of Mount Talang on Sumatra's island as the peak spewed hot ash after being unsettled by huge tremors from the same fault line that caused last year's deadly tsunami. They really have been hitting bad out there. It's almost as if that entire portion of this planet is cracking up. It really is. Former fugitive Eric Rudolph has now pleaded guilty to carrying out the 1996 Olympic bombing, as well as other blasts in Atlanta and Alabama. He's 38 years old. Rudolph admitted to the crimes first in a court in Birmingham, Alabama, and then later in Atlanta. Last week, Rudolph agreed to a plea bargain. That simply means he receives 4 life sentences without parole, but avoids the death penalty. The 4 blasts killed 2 people and injured more than 120 others. University of Kentucky and Ohio State researchers are conducting a test to see if a common fruit is useful in slowing or preventing oral cancer. Scientists believe that the black raspberry carries 2 acids that can inhibit tumor growth. The researchers will put the theory to the test this summer in a trial at Ohio State by using a gel made from freeze-dried blackberry raspberries. Obviously, they say, we'd like to see these lesions completely disappear, but they think that everyone would be happy just to see the whole process slow down. Oral cancer causes up to 8,000 deaths nationally each year, is generally associated with alcohol and tobacco use. The head of the CDC health agency says the government should restrict the handling of flu virus to more secure labs, as thousands of scientists now around the world are trying to destroy a deadly flu strain that had been sent to thousands of labs for testing. Dr. Julie Gerberding, head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, said the agency has already recommended that change, a step not previously taken because flu virus has never been considered, they say, a possible bioterrorism weapon. Gerberding's statements came less than 24 hours after the World Health Organization began urging the world's labs to destroy an almost 50-year-old pandemic flu virus. The germ is sent in kits as part of proficiency testing to nearly 5,000 labs, mostly in the United States. A Canadian lab alerted WHO that the sample was from the 1957 flu pandemic, which they say killed between 1 million and 4 million people. It has not been included in flu vaccines since 1968, and anyone born after that date has little or no immunity to it. The WHO said Canada, South Korea, Hong Kong, and Singapore had already destroyed their samples while Japan was doing the same. Taiwan and Germany also announced that they had destroyed all of their vials as well. John Rappaport has been following this story for us. He's an investigative reporter for more than 20 years and the author of five books. He has written on medical fraud and deep politics. John, there's still a new twist to this very bizarre story, isn't there?
Boy, there are at least three or four more new twists today. You know, it turns out, first of all, George, that the Canadian lab that you just mentioned found this sample of 57 flu virus outside of any vial or test kit in the lab. In other words, it had already escaped. This was reported very briefly in the press. Nobody mentioned it after that, but this is highly significant. I mean, we're talking now. The virus had obviously already escaped in the lab, and for them to now say that it's under control is just whistling in the dark. So that's the first, you know, bombshell that's gone on today since we spoke about this last night. And it's a pretty fantastic bombshell.
It sure is.
The other thing that I discovered today in talking to a representative of the American Association of Bioanalysts, which is one of the groups that has been sending out these test samples, is that a lot of these labs they send them to are connected to hospitals. They're in the hospital.
They're right there. That's right.
Right there. So what that means is you've got a lot of people in these hospitals who have already severely compromised immune systems. They would be the people who really could be damaged or killed by this kind of virus. And so here you have all these labs in the hospitals that have been fooling around with these test kits, and the way they do the testing in these labs gives them no idea of what specific flu virus they're working on. This is another revelation I discovered by talking to this spokesman today. In other words, what the labs do is they simply test for a general form of virus. They're asked, is this a type A virus? Is it an Asian virus? And they figure out whether it is or it isn't, and they report the results.
One thing, too, I'm confused about, John, because yesterday, you know, they're reporting that, you know, they sent this out to 5,000 labs, but they were saying that they sent out 3,700 flu strains. So there's a difference here of 1,300. I didn't understand that. Have you put that together yet?
Yeah, well, obviously, there have been many more samples that have been sent out. And what I discovered today was there are actually four medical groups that have been sending out these samples all over the world.
Just the one from Cincinnati.
No. We're talking about four of them. And so obviously this means that we're, you know, many more samples have been sent out than they are talking about. Although they all appear to have been provided by Meridian Bioscience as a sort of subcontractor. Well, Meridian isn't talking. They keep saying our executives are traveling and they're out of town and they're not available for comment.
What about these other labs? What are they saying?
Medical groups, for example, we have a spokesman, Jared Schwartz, who's speaking on behalf of Meridian, although he works for the College of American Pathologists. And what he's saying is Meridian thought they had sent out a flu virus from the year 2000, not 1957.
Okay. How do you make that mistake?
Yeah, really. And then, and it turns out, according to Schwartz, that Meridian really didn't do up these samples of flu virus at all. They got them from another company, and that company got them from another company.
So this strain has been jockeyed all over the place.
You got it. Exactly. And so what we're really looking at here, in my opinion, after spending the whole day on the phone, is the endemic problem with all medical laboratories, which is germs get out, germs escape, there is contamination. It is never sealed up, no matter what they say. And when they start shipping this stuff from lab to lab all over the world, as I discovered originally back in 1987, all sorts of germs and fluid and material get out. They travel, nobody knows where they've gone, and then the PR people step in and they make statements to cover it all up.
It's great. Let's take some phone calls, John. Here are the numbers. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is open for you right now at 818-501-4721. And the wild card line, 818-501-4109. You've heard this very strange story. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment with our investigative reporter, John Rappaport, on Coast to Coast AM. I don't know, John. This looks like one of the strangest stories I've ever seen in my life, and I've seen a lot of them. You too?
Yeah, me too. And this is incredibly bizarre. Here's the thing that I just came across, and that is, if we assume that this was a mistake and that this lab thought they were sending out flu virus from 2000, year 2000, instead of 57.
Sure. And give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, but what are the odds that the mistake, the unintentional mistake that they would make, would result in this particular year, 1957, going out instead of 1974, 1981? This begins to look more to me like something intentional is behind this. In other words, somebody wanted to float this thing out there, not because they were a bioterrorist, but because it's part of the overall scenario of causing panic, therefore driving more people to have to get vaccinated, thereby increasing this idea that we're all in for the big one, the great pandemic. It is beginning to look more and more to me like that kind of scenario than simply somebody made a stupid mistake.
Panic means control, John.
Absolutely. That's the formula.
Let's go to the phones. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
This is Ray from Oklahoma City.
Hello, Ray.
And what you're talking about, it sounds familiar, because you take 58,000, you say, it's been all over the world?
5,000 labs.
5,000? Well, where did this one lab get that much virus to send all over the world?
Well, they were the repositories for it, right? They were given this to hold. And then they made up these vials and sent them out to all these other labs. And
yeah, but that would make it a lot easier for these terrorists to get their hands on.
Oh, and there's no question about that. In this particular case, too, John Rappaport, who makes the decision who gets what strains and where they're kept? Is that the CDC?
You know, I think that this has gone completely out of control. And the caller raises a very good point. There is no reason for all of these labs all over the world to be holding these germs and specimens and so forth.
I mean, what else do they have?
Yeah, exactly. And why should you have so many laboratories with so many of these past year specimens? They know everything they need to know about the past years of the flu. There is no reason to be holding all of these. It's a direct invitation to the kind of leakage and mass contamination that is going on that we're seeing right here.
Well, you know, when you hear stories years ago that the AIDS virus, HIV, was created in a lab and then let go intentionally, you know, initially when you hear these things, you go, preposterous, no way. And then as you kind of mature in life and you learn that things aren't always as they seem and you realize that government agencies did some chemical testing over sailors, over land, over St. Louis, where I was, though I wasn't there at the time. You begin to say, well, maybe. And then when you see stories like this, John, where, you know, it is not only ridiculous, it's moronic, you begin to say, you know what, maybe it is possible that some of this stuff was created and let go, intentionally or otherwise.
Yeah, and if not created, certainly let go. One of these organizations, again, the American Association of Bioanalysts, told me today, I said, how do you send these specimens out? They said DHL and FedEx.
No.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. That's how they go. They use overnight couriers. And I said, which ones? He said DHL and FedEx.
How'd you like to be the poor FedEx courier who has to pick this stuff up and put it in his truck before he takes it to the airport?
Yeah, and suppose they get smashed and so forth. They get jostled around. This has happened. When I was writing my first book in 1988, AIDS, Inc., I came across the most horrendous stories of laboratory contamination and leakage of germs and fluid in the mail. It was just unbelievable, and it's out of control. It has always been out of control, but the PR people move in to cover it up.
Let's move to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on with John Rappaport. Hi there.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
John, good to hear you on here.
And where you, and where are you calling from, sir?
My name is Tim. I'm calling from Anaheim.
Okay, it's all yours. Go ahead, Tim.
And I'd just like to ask John and George when you guys plan on doing a show on AIDS, Inc., as when I was with a mutual friend of John and ours, a late friend, she who remembers, we covered that book when he first brought it out. And having a brother who has AIDS, it was incredibly enlightening to me with family members in the medical industry and family members that have AIDS, how, you know, on it his information was.
Oh, and there's no doubt. You're a little intuitive on us because we've been working on putting together a packaged program. So you're ahead of the game, but yes, we are working on it.
Appreciate it, Tim. Thank you.
Hey, good to hear you, John, and I'm glad George has got you on this. And George, keep going. I don't do this kind of work anymore, but I'm glad you and Art are out there still doing it.
Oh, yeah, we're not going to stop. Somebody's got to do it. And, John, we're glad that you're doing it through your website, of course, nomorefakenews.com, where you didn't start this way, though, did you, John? I mean, you weren't a skeptic or a non-believer in the beginning, were you?
No, I wasn't really. It leaked in, you know, the contamination factor. I was writing stories for newspapers and magazines, and when I started to get into the medical area, I began to run up against stone walls when I would ask very simple questions, like the kinds of questions that we're dealing with now, and people telling me that they didn't want to publish material on this, and I began to realize that there was a heavy control factor in the mainstream press, and I just couldn't get certain things published. And that's what turned me into a skeptic on these matters and made me kind of, you know, dig underground to find out the truth. And then people began coming forward to me who worked inside these organizations, major health organizations and doctors and so forth, saying, let me tell you what's really going on. That happened in the late 80s, and from then on, you know, I've realized that the appearance is definitely not the reality.
I'm just waiting for the moment when they say, well, some of this has leaked out. It would be better for everyone to get a vaccination.
And it could very well happen tomorrow. It could happen in the next few days. And the way they'll say it is, there isn't a problem. We've got it under control.
Not to worry.
In case, yeah, don't worry, but just in case, this is what we want you to do. And you can hear and see in the press right now, they're talking out of both sides of their mouths. They're saying, it isn't a problem, we've got it under control, and then you see the other stories, threat of global pandemic. So
yeah,
it's pillar to post. They're whipsawing the public, and what always comes out of that is some new kind of tightening down control, and this could very well be the result of it.
You know, here they are, countries urged by the World Health Organization to destroy the samples of the dangerous virus because of the slight but real risk it could trigger a global outbreak. I mean, in one sentence, they're basically telling you things are okay, but things are so dangerous we're all in trouble.
That's right.
John, I'm going to hold you over. You going to stay?
Yeah, I'll be right here.
All right, we're going to take more phone calls. There's a lot of people on hold, and I don't want to let you go. So we'll be back in a moment. I will have, during the mid-break, some more news of the day. Then we'll go right back to John Rappaport and your phone calls. I'm George Norrie, and yes, this is Coast to Coast AM.
Subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505. George Norrie, call the wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, Mike the Skeptic, he calls himself, from South Carolina, has sent me a fast blast. I shall read it to you. It says, believe it or not, for once, I actually agree with you. There is no way some idiot just walked down a corridor somewhere, grabbed a bunch of deadly flu virus, packed it off through the mail to research labs. You need clearance, documentation. There's no way. Well, Mike the Skeptic, you are right. Here's some other quick stories of the day, then it's back to John Rappaport and your phone calls. Campbell Soup Company is recalling nearly 500,000 pounds of Campbell's SpaghettiOs plus calcium. You need to know about this. It's 15-ounce cans because their product labels fail to list that meatballs are made with soy protein, which is a known allergen to some people that can cause a severe allergic reaction in some people. To date, nobody has been reported as ill because of this. Each recalled can of Campbell's SpaghettiOs plus calcium, pasta in tomato and cheese sauce, bears the date code August 2006 with this number after it, 02105. Just if you want to check those cans. August 2006, 02105 if you are allergic to soy products. Walmart is recalling 220,000 children's karaoke machines over concerns about lead paint on the control buttons. The company has reported no injuries as a result of the paint. The recall affects the Neutronix karaoke cassette player and recorder with digital radio and alarm features. The machines are made in China, sold in Walmart stores nationwide from June 2003 to March of this year for $20. If you have this machine, you're supposed to go to Walmart to receive a refund. A woman who claimed that she scooped up a human finger in her chili at a Wendy's restaurant, she's decided not to sue the fast food chain. She dropped her claim because it apparently caused her great emotional distress and continues to be difficult for her, says her attorney. She claimed that she found a 1.5-inch long fingertip while dining at a Wendy's restaurant in San Jose. She later filed a claim with the franchise owner, which was her first step, and finally in the lawsuit. Court records, by the way, show that she has a history of making legal claims against corporations, including a former employer, General Motors, and a fast food restaurant. And she acknowledged she received a settlement for medical costs several years ago after she claimed that her daughter was sickened after eating at a Las Vegas restaurant. The country of Qatar, some call it Qatar, plans to start using robots as riders in popular camel races after international criticism that they use child jockeys. It said the robot, developed by a Swiss company, had been tested successfully and that the energy-rich country was considering setting up a factory to build them. A sheikh in charge of the project referred to United Nations concerns over child jockeys. Apparently, they've been using several thousand boys, some of them as young as 4 years old, to work as camel jockeys there. Many of them abducted, sold by their families. The boys are kept in prison-like conditions and underfed to keep them light so the camels can run faster. My, oh my. Researchers have identified what may be the perfect place for a moon base, a crater rim near the lunar North Pole that's in near constant sunlight, yet not far away from suspected stores of water ice. Permanent sunlight there could provide crucial solar energy for any future moon settlement, and being close to the possibility of water ice, if they melt it, they'll be able to use it for rocket fuel and for breathing and for drinking. And then there's this.
Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me at the wheel.
Now that, of course, is the voice of Chuck Berry, but the person playing the piano out there in the background, his name's Johnny Johnson, a rock and roll pioneer who teamed with fellow St. Louis and Chuck Berry for hits like Roll Over Beethoven and No Particular Place to Go. He has died at the age of 80. He died at his home Wednesday morning. He had been hospitalized a month ago with pneumonia and was on dialysis for a kidney ailment, but he performed as recently as 2 weeks ago and was planning to teach a music class in the coming weeks in his West Virginia home. Johnson has been called the founding father of rock and roll, though he was never a household name, known mostly as Berry's piano player and collaborator. Still, he was inducted into Cleveland's Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Johnny Johnson, dead at the age of 80. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with John Rappaport, who's been doing an investigative report for us on this 1957 flu strain that somehow got into 5,000 testing labs. My, oh, my, what a mistake that was. Let's go to the phones, John. You ready again?
Sure.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air, and where might you be?
Well, I just passed Cordelia, California. This is Lori.
You were probably on hold for so long. You started off in Denver, didn't you?
Well, I think it was Atlanta.
Okay. Go ahead, Lori.
Well, I have two-part questions. Part one is, could this be like a kind of, some kind of, where a scientist would have stock in antidote or vaccine for the flu in hopes that some of it would get out so that the stock would go up? And part two, would it, what are the symptoms of the 57 flu? Since it's been so long that anybody's been sick with it, what would be the symptoms that one might look for and, you know, someone might not know that they're sick, and you could just maybe could tell, like, a high fever or, you know, a rash, you know, delusions. And I'll listen off the air.
All right. Well, I would presume, John, that the symptoms are much like most major flus, right?
Absolutely. It's the same deal. And, in fact, although I don't know about a single scientist who's trying to profit off of this, there are vaccine companies, you can bet, hovering around, licking their lips at the prospect of several billion dollars worth of profit from making a vaccine that they claim will keep you immune from this strain of virus.
Well, let me tell you, when you hear things Bextra in other pharmaceuticals that have been taken off the market now, after given FDA approval, you know, pharmaceutical companies have got to look for other ways to make money. Vaccines might be one of them, huh?
Sure. I mean, one of the things that I discovered today that just blew me away, again, these four medical groups that have been sending out these virus samples, one of them is impossible to find, at least for me, on the internet. I mean, I can't even find the name of this company.
Are they real?
I assume they are. And another one of the companies, which is located in Kansas City, Missouri, does have a website. The phone number there I called, it's disconnected. I called information. The operator said, yes, there's a working phone number, but it's unlisted.
An unlisted phone number to a company?
Yeah, to a giant medical group, the American Association of Family Practitioners, very well known.
How weird.
And these are the people who are sending these samples all around the world? I mean, is this a good indicator? I don't think so.
Good point, John. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi there.
Well, hi there. Excuse me. This is Nick calling you from Chatteroy, just north of Spokane.
Sure, Nick.
On KQNT.
Good to have you with us. Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, thank you. I'm the 1968 model myself, having been born that year in April. And what I was kind of wondering, now they say that it's not been included in a vaccine since 1968, so does that mean that it was a vaccine issued in the fall? And would someone that was born in 1968 have actually received a flu vaccine? How young do they vaccinate children?
John, all they're reporting is anyone born after 1968 has little or no immunity. I don't know if that means if you were born in 68, if you got the vaccine or not in those days.
Highly doubtful that an infant would get a flu vaccine, you know, at birth or soon afterwards.
That's what I thought.
At that time.
And the other part, though, John, is who would want one?
Yeah. That's the other thing, you see. I mean, there's a whole other level to this story, which is I decided to go and look up some statistics on the 1957 flu just to see, you know, was it really a pandemic at all? Well, they claim that between 1 and 4 million people globally died in 57 from that particular virus. They don't really know, and they admit that they don't really know. In normal years, they're talking about an upper limit of around 500,000 people that die globally from the flu each year. That is not a pandemic. We're not talking, I mean, they have inflated this whole thing way out of proportion to say that in 1957 there was a global pandemic from the 57 flu virus.
I wonder how many people just die every year around this planet.
Absolutely.
Do we know what these numbers are? And I'm not talking about just the flu, but I mean total people. How many people die on this planet every year? And obviously they're being replaced by new ones. But I'd love to know what that statistic is. I wonder if anybody can find it, fast blast me on that.
That would be very interesting to know. The other thing is, of course, that most of the people, in fact, perhaps all the people who are claimed to be dying from the flu, any kind of flu, already have severely compromised immune systems from other causes that have nothing to do with the flu. And this is where you really have to focus if you're interested in health. How do you build up the immune system? And you certainly don't do that with medical drugs or vaccines. You do that by maintaining a good level of health and nutrition and, you know, that sort of thing. That's what's really at the bottom of all of this. It is not simply, you know, healthy persons walking down the street and some flu virus flies down from a building and attacks them. That's not the way it works.
East of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yes, this is Noel calling County of Tucumcari, New Mexico.
Hi, Noel.
How are you tonight, George?
Good. Go ahead.
Hey, I wanted to ask you guys, why would they send out 5,000 vaccines to different places? Why couldn't they just keep it in one place and test it or do what they needed to do there? I don't understand it.
Well, these labs are basically schooled every year, and they want them to be proficient in identifying germs and viruses, so they test them. And this was, I guess, supposed to be one of those tests. Was it not, John Rappaport?
Absolutely. That's the way they do it. I spoke with this representative today from the American Association of Bioanalysts, and he described the whole procedure. They send out these samples, and the lab techs have no idea that they're even looking at test samples because the lab techs do testing on people that are sick. It's just another sample. It comes down the line. They test it out. They give the results. The results go back to the original people where they were, who were sending it. And they get a grade, A, B, whatever it is, pass, fail. So that's why they send these things out all the time. But the problem is they're flying all over the place, and they have them in repositories all over the place.
John, who's to say that some of these viruses and illnesses that we get every year aren't because of the result of them sending out these things? This is the first time I've ever heard about this testing through 5,000 labs. How do we know that, you know, people are complaining about respiratory problems that last months and months and months? How do we know this isn't some strain that has gotten loose because they've been trying to do this for years?
Tell you a real good experiment to run, and that is you look at couriers. You look at FedEx people. You look at DHL people. You look at all those people, UPS people, who handle this stuff, which leaks, which breaks and passage, all of those things. And you see what kind of illnesses they get. Believe me, laboratory contamination inside the labs and in shipping is just absolutely unbelievable. There's a famous story of what's called the HeLa cells, which contaminated all kinds of laboratories around the world for years and years and years. Nobody knew it. They were samples from one woman who had cancer. These cells grew immortally by themselves in the lab in petri dishes, and that's why they were used. And hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cancer studies were completely invalidated when they discovered that these cells were contaminating other experiments. They were in all over the place. You couldn't get rid of them. It's like trying to get rid of ants. They were everywhere around the world, and nobody wanted to admit it, because their status as researchers would be destroyed by it. But one guy in Oakland, California, stood up and said, this is what's going on. And he carried on a one-man campaign. And what he proved was contamination in these labs is everywhere.
I believe that. Hey, Cameron from Manitoba tells us that through his university sociology textbook, it reads that about 55 million people die every year on this planet.
Mm.
55 million people.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know,
out of 6 billion.
There are approximately 1.9 billion cases every year on the planet of various kinds of lung infections. And one of the reasons that I suspected that SARS was some kind of a fake repackaged disease,
mm-hmm,
was that it was basically lung infection. And then when I discovered that stat, I realized, gee, they're talking about 600 people who have died or 700 people around the world. They're calling it a pandemic in progress. And meanwhile, they've got almost 2 billion people every year in the world that have traditional lung infection.
Isn't it interesting, too, John, how they have kind of pushed to the wayside the avian flu fear when they were talking about a pandemic there? They haven't even brought that up now.
That's right. That's an excellent point. This is a kind of a shell game that they play, George. For 15 minutes, they get you panicked about this one, and then the next thing you know, the little pea is under the shell over here, and it's a new one. First, it's
let's not take our eyes off
Nile, it's avian flu, and now it's 57 flu virus.
Well, let's not take our eyes off the shell.
Right.
We're all in trouble. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Jesse Alfonso.
Hey, Jesse, go ahead.
I got a good question for you. Out of that 5,000, just one container just busting, what would it cost?
I couldn't hear you, Jesse, right toward the end. Out of the 5,000, then what did you say?
Just one container busting or falling or...
Yeah, if just one container broke, John, what would happen?
Well, it depends where it broke and what happened after that. But certainly you could get a situation in a hospital, for example, if it broke in a lab and the tech wasn't working the right way, that he would be carrying this around the hospital with all kinds of sick, very sick people in the hospital that really are subject to this kind of virus. You could have massive damage inside that, health damage inside that hospital. Absolutely. That's one of the things that could happen, and that would be one of the most important things to look at.
Let's go to our quick last caller, first-time caller. You can give us a quick question. Go ahead.
I do. Hi, George.
Sure.
Hi, John.
Go ahead.
I had a question about his research in the 1988 book he did on AIDS, mm-hmm. Inc., about mosquitoes. Now, we know that malaria is transmitted by mosquitoes, but mm-hmm. what about the HIV virus?
Was that a myth, John, that mosquitoes could transmit it or not?
It seemed to me that it was a myth, but, you know, the question really is, and of course we don't have time for this, how important is that virus to begin with? And that was really the subject of the book. Whether mosquitoes could carry it or not, yeah, it's possible because somebody who has the virus and gets bitten by a mosquito, the mosquito could then carry it somewhere else and transmit it. There was a town, Belgrade in Florida, where that was apparently happening. That became a big story for 5 minutes. But it's not the kind of thing that people need to worry about. Oh, gee, I better, you know, put up netting in my house. It's not that sort of thing. It was another great fear story that lasted for a few weeks.
We'll work on a program like that, John. And when I said yesterday, we'll have you back with an update. Who would expect you to come back the next day with this thing?
Really? Really?
Keeps going. John, thanks a lot.
Thank you, George.
John's website, nomorefakenews.com, linked up with his name on coasttocoastam.com. In a moment, our guest standing by, Stephen Quayle, and you don't want to miss this one. I'm George Norrie, and what a night on Coast to Coast AM.
The After Dark Newsletter. Subscribe now by calling toll-free 1-888-727-5505.